Hello, hello. Welcome to Negotiator. Hi, everyone. Welcome back to Call Me Negotiator, and I am your host, Charlotte. This is the show where we explore all things cross-cultural, how people from different backgrounds think, communicate, and make sense of the world across China, the U.S., Canada, and beyond. You can listen to us on CJSF 90.1 FM or join us online through cjsf.ca by clicking Listen Live. And for our Chinese-speaking audience, we are also streaming on WeChat live streaming under the channel 野蛮生长夏洛特. Today, we have a very special guest, Connor. He grew up across North America from the U.S. to Canada, and in communities shaped by all kinds of cultural influences. And over the years, he's developed his own curiosity and personal perspective on China, North America, and how people experience culture differently depending on where they come from. So today, I thought it'd be really fun to hear his take on cross-cultural surprises, misunderstandings, and the connections he sees between China, the U.S., and Canada. Connor, welcome to the show. And before we jump into today's topics, why don't you start by introducing yourself a little? Tell us where you grew up, what shaped your worldview, and how you first became curious about cross-cultural experiences.
Well, thank you very much, Charlotte, for having me on the show once more. It was a pleasure joining you last week, and we'll delve into some more detail today. So, hi, everybody. I'm Connor. I'm the head of the music department here at CJSF. I'm also a programmer. I've been on air for about 8 years, hosting a show that's all about electronic music and chiptune and video game soundtracks. I also host another show on Friday that's all about brand new music to the station. My background professionally, I'm a classical musician. I've been playing piano for over 30 years now. I've also done a whole bunch of work with jazz and funk and world music and all kinds of performing on stage, musicals, classical music, rock, jazz, hip-hop, all that kind of stuff. I also enjoy a lot of audio technology as well too, so I have a lot of experience in recording studios and working with sound, doing sound for film, TV, and video games. And in general, I'm a big fan of language, cuisine, culture. I've had a lot of experiences traveling to various countries. I've been to several countries in the Sinosphere, as we say in English. So mainland China, Taiwan, Hong Kong. On my list still yet to go is Singapore, Malaysia, a few of the other countries that have Chinese as part of their culture. And I really think that it's a good opportunity for us to talk about different perspectives, like we said last week.
Right. I mean, I'm so amazed by how early you start to touch on different kind of culture in East, including Eastern culture. Mm-hmm. But like, I think it's very different because I feel like as a Chinese kid, I grew up, I watch Hollywood movie and I listen to all those Billboard songs. So I had a huge curiosity and I think proper understanding towards to North American culture. But like, I think it would be really hard for Westerners to understand Eastern cultures at that early stage, right?
I was very lucky to have parents who traveled quite a bit. My dad especially would regularly go on business trips to Shanghai, Beijing, Taipei, all around Taiwan, Kaohsiung, Hsinchu, also to Singapore, Malaysia, so Kuala Lumpur, Penang, and also to other parts of East Asia. And so he would always bring me things back, and especially newspapers, music, media, movies, food. So I was exposed to a lot of Chinese culture as well as East Asian culture, in addition to European and North American culture. I grew up in a very multicultural environment. I'm originally from the Bay Area in California, so in San Francisco in Northern California kind of place. And Both Vancouver, San Francisco, and then also I lived for a bit of time on the East Coast of the U.S., close to New York City in New Jersey. And all three of those areas have a pretty strong overseas Chinese community. And especially Vancouver and San Francisco, absolutely. Those are some of the earliest in North America. And we always grew up listening to music from around the world, having food from around the world. And so it was a... I feel very lucky to have been exposed to that culture at a young age.
Well, for me, you know, like I live in New York City for several years, and I also went to California. I think I'm pretty familiar with the U.S. culture. I would say U.S. is definitely, in general, more extroverted and passionate, and Chinese people are more like a subtle culture. Like, I don't express everything, I don't put everything on table, but I will give you, like, hint.
Yes.
But that, like, you know, and I think we also really care about how other people think about us, so we really care about the manner. That's how I got educated. But American people are... pretty much like, hey, I really need to care about my own feeling. I need to be independent. And that makes the American culture, American dream. And when I came to Canada and Vancouver, I feel somehow it's the combination of both, which is very different. How do you think about it?
I would absolutely agree with that. My first kind of trip overseas was in 2011, kind of in my mid-20s. I went to Shanghai in mainland China, as well as Seoul in South Korea. And I had been all around the U.S. As a kid, both the Southwest, on the West Coast, on the East Coast as well. And I had a pretty good understanding of American culture, definitely growing up in my family. It's an extroverted society. And sometimes I moved up to Vancouver a little over 20 years ago. So I've been in that in-between world. And my father is Canadian from Montreal. My mother is American from California. And so I've always had that cross-cultural relationship between those two cultures, the U.S. and Canada. And after having been to the East in Shanghai, and then a year later, I spent a month touring as a drummer as part of a rock band in mainland China. And we were there for several weeks. And it was a great trip because I got to see many different parts of the country. But I would agree that Chinese culture in general is more about the group and taking care of the collective. And you see that a lot in places like Taiwan, Japan, South Korea, as Singapore as well, too. There's this thought that we need to take care of everybody and that keeping in line with the group and not sticking out is a preferable thing. Whereas in the United States, it's the complete opposite. You have a lot of, in English, they say rugged individualism. So individualism, meaning that you focus on yourself, you take care of yourself, you're self-sufficient, you can do it on your own, you can do anything. And it's very much a strong push towards that. You know, sometimes kids are out of the house at 18, or, you know, going to university or working on their own, and they build their own support network, or they just do things on their own. Whereas in China, it's sometimes common for people to live in multi-generational households, where you have your gonggong and popo living for a long time, and you, so you take care of your family. I will say, though, that my family, because of some of the values that I grew up with, it was that mix of both. It wasn't just, there was support for what I wanted to do as an individual, but also we take care of each other. It wasn't just you're all on your own. Family was very important to me in the belief system that I grew up.
Wow, you understand that, that very well. I think that could explain a lot of the misunderstanding between two sides. Like, for example, because we are more like a parenting style, that we're we're like top down, from even politics to normal day lives. It's like top, from the top to the bottom, that hey, somebody's guiding you and taking care of you, but as exchange, you are supposed to listen to elders' wisdoms, you're supposed to listen, and being educated are very willing to be educated. So that's how I got educated. However, the United States or Canadians, they do care about, like, hey, you need to be independent, you need to have your own critical thing, critical thoughts, critical thinking and judgments. And I luckily observed both cultures. So on the other hand, I have conflicts. You know, sometimes I'm like,
same.
I want to do my own thing. I want freedom. But my mom is like, I want you to leave near me, right?
Yes, absolutely. You get that sense that, and like you said, Canada is kind of in between both worlds.
Yes.
I find that there is a collective attitude to an extent in Canada, things like healthcare, taking care of the population, whereas in the United States, it's very much you need to be able to take care of yourself. You need to be strong in that aspect. Canada has influences from the West, from the U.S., France, the U.K., but it also is a really, especially in the last 30 to 50 years, it's a hugely multicultural country. And so people are bringing in values from other countries and integrating them with Canadian values, to say.
Yeah. You know, like one thing that I was very surprised is that, I mean, I feel very spoiled because when I come here, Canadians just overly friendly. They're just like super, super well-mannered. Like everybody, when we cross the street, I literally have to like pretend I'm playing my phone so the cars will just go. Otherwise, they will literally like really, really far. And or they're very, very close. They can totally cross it. But I'm like really far. They're like, you go. I'm like, you go. They were just like fight for a few minutes for like who's going first.
It's true. The joke we always said is that two Canadians walk into a door and then no one enters because they're waiting.
Oh, yeah, exactly. I think that's fun. I think a lot of Chinese international students, they grab this kind of manner as a good gesture where they hold the doors for others. But, you know, in China, the generations or the education, the manners, the gestures between different kind of generations are very different. And plus, we have huge amount of population. So it becomes a joke that some people, they went back and then they hold the doors, but some, maybe elders, they did not realize or other people did not realize, then they become the doorman like the forever.
Yes.
And that's like really funny. And some people complain about it, but to me, I think that's kind of cute and show the different differences between how we got influenced by the group activities.
Absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
Right. So I, you know what, Connor just recommend me a Shanghai dress. I don't know if it's like very reverse. I'm supposed to know more, but he knows a lot because he's a professional musician. And this is really great. We're going to share this song. It's Shanghai Jazz. I have no idea who played for
it. It's a mix of playlists, music, and it's about an hour long on YouTube. And it's a mix of Shanghai Jazz from the 40s and 50s. So Shanghai being a very international city, you have the international quarter on the Pudong side of the Pud River. So the Puxi side was mostly farmland, and then the Pudong side you have things like the Bund and the International Quarter and the French Quarter,
right?
And so you get this mix of Chinese attitudes and work ethics, but with European kind of styles. So early 20th century stuff.
Can't wait. Let's listen to it.
让我沉沦在无方时。 就在此徘徊。
Hello, welcome back. I hope you enjoy the Shanghai Jazz.
Yes.
I loved it a lot. So when we're listening to this beautiful music, me and Connor was talking about, hey, like we're both chasing success. Mm-hmm. But what's the the definition to success or how do we achieve it could be very different between the East and the West. But
Absolutely.
When we talk about East and West, now as a Chinese, I talk about it from what I understanding, and I'm sure a lot of Asian people would relate to it, but Connor would really talk about his opinions from as a Canadian and American or in general Westerner. He cannot represent everyone, of course, but I think he really understands a lot.
It's interesting. My definition of success has changed over time based on where I've lived. In the United States, there's a big push to have not only financial success, but also kind of recognition as well, too, popular success.
Explain that, please.
So, obviously, for most people, success is being able to take care of yourself, being comfortable financially,
right.
Having a good living environment.
For
I think
sure.
That's pretty universal across the board. And, you know, depending on your scale and your education, that changes.
Yeah.
But popular success in the sense of being well-liked in a group, being accepted by both niche interest as well as kind of the general society as well. United States culture is very much a celebrity culture.
Does that mean?
So for a lot of the world, not all of their media, but a significant portion of media does come from the United States. Things like Hollywood movies, music,
right.
TV, video games, all those kind of things. There's a lot of culture export.
Right.
And it's really only in the last maybe 30, 40 years that we've had culture import into the United States.
Why do you think they start to have the culture import, and also what kind of culture import could you make an example?
Sure.
Yeah.
For me, kind of the big thing that comes through, especially in the 1970s and 80s, you get a lot of films from, for example, Europe, the United Kingdom, France and Germany and Italy. You also get, for example, wuxia films from China as well,
yeah.
too. And it's interesting, when culture first started to come into the United States in terms of culture outside of North America and
right.
Europe, you get a lot of translation and dubbing. And I think in the last 10, 15 years, now we get an appreciation for things like, for example, the Korean movie Parasite. That wasn't dubbed. It was just subtitled. So there are always going to be people who appreciate culture in its original form with maybe just a bit of translation. But when big exports of culture came into the U.S. and Canada, they were edited and changed to fit a Western audience, as opposed to being kept in their original form and just brought over as an example.
Oh, that's very interesting, because I felt like last time we talked about, as a Chinese person, I'm like very shocked how open-minded and how much the North Americans or the Western people, especially young people, embrace the new culture, embrace the, even they started to discover and trying to explore the Chinese culture, like the some kind of the old stories, like Journey to the West.
Yes.
And you mentioned about that, but how did you start to explore Journey to the West?
So for me, I kind of had two main influences in terms of getting into Chinese culture. I would say my father and my uncle. So my they're brothers, and they grew up in Montreal in Canada. And my uncle has taught Tai Chi and Qigong and Nijiaquan for over 30 years in Montreal. And so when I was maybe 11 or 12 years old, I got introduced to Tai Chi, which then made me start reading a lot of classic Chinese literature, Journey to the West, also Lao Tzu, Zhuangzi as well too.
Yeah.
So a lot of things that are kind of inaccessible unless you go and put the effort into learning about them.
Wow.
So I think it also takes, especially at that time, resources for translation and English versions of things were not the best. As the internet and translation and culture has evolved over the last couple of decades, it's gotten better. People have gotten more interested.
Right.
They're also bringing in perspectives, outside perspectives, to be able to help outside audiences understand things better.
Right.
Because there, as I'm sure you know, there are things in Chinese culture that, unless you speak Mandarin or Cantonese or Hokkien or Min, they don't translate.
Yeah, it's complicated.
It is.
Yeah.
It's a different style of writing. It's a different style of speaking and thinking. And I think that goes with some of the culture shock as well, too. But also culture appreciation. You know, it's not all that things are super foreign. And I also think that when you're young, you can change, not change your ways, but you can set a mode of thinking that makes you more open to things. Because if you never experience stuff from outside of your culture, outside of your area, you will react maybe negatively to things.
Right.
But if you're exposed to that at a young age, you get normalized to it.
Right.
And it's a healthy engagement with culture.
Yeah, so when we talk about that, so I would say as a Chinese person, we grew up in a competitive environment. So we really value success. You can have different kind of goals, like having, like getting into a good school, getting a good degree is a huge success as
Same
a kid.
In the US.
Yeah, right. Like, really?
Yeah.
And also, like, but as an adult, we not just making money, right? Like, make a comfortable life. I think over the time, we started to value, especially now, how can we create something kind of product that's popular? Like, I can make money, but it's a reward from the value that I create, the product that I create. And talking about that, I think the huge success we would value is the video game that Black Myth Wukong. Why we think it's a bigger success after we find a lot of Chinese players that they loved it, but then later on they got exported to the US, to Canada, to Europe, and the Western young people or players, they loved it, and then we feel very happy, like, oh my god, we got accepted unexpectedly. Like, could you
It's a we were talking about this last week about how it's kind of the first major Chinese developed video game that has, there have been games that have been popular, very popular, for example, League of Legends or any of those Tencent games. And there's just as much social media culture and video game culture in China as there is in the West. It's just, it evolved slightly differently and it comes from different cultural backgrounds. But Black Myth Wukong was, in my mind, it's one of the first games that has crossed that barrier. And it's also, in the West, what we call a triple A game. So the in Hollywood, you'd say a blockbuster movie. This is a blockbuster video game. It's critically well regarded. It's also it highlights culture in an in not just a traditional way, but in an appropriate way.
Like, so visually appealing.
Visually
way.
Appealing. It's also historically accurate.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't. It comes from a place of understanding, as opposed to just trying to make a parody or humor of things. Mm. So it respects culture from a starting point. Mm. And I think a lot of people now are appreciating that a lot more. Mm. That when you respect the culture and you try to do things properly. Another big one that just came out is called Ghost of Yote, and so it's a sequel to Ghost of Tsushima. Ghost of Yote is set in Hokkaido in northern Japan in the 1600s. But things like the costume design, the setting, the time period, the music. It was the same thing with Black Myth Wukong. The soundtrack pulls a lot from Chinese classical instruments. Mm. The armor design, this costume design, the level design, it makes you feel as if you're in that time period, because the novel Journey to the West is from the 16th century. Mm. You know, it's from the Ming Dynasty. So it is, it's old school Chinese. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And now I say old school, and if you really want to go back, it'd be like, you know, the Warring States or the Chu or the Spring and Autumn period. That's very old. And it's important, I think, for people to have a little history lesson beforehand when they play that. But it's one of those games that was regarded extremely popular in China. Mm. And then it comes to North America and everyone is loving it. Mm. And everyone is playing it. Mm. There was a period of time last year where that was the game for streaming things like Twitch or TikTok, that kind of stuff. Everyone was playing it.
Wow.
And because it was fun to play, it looked amazing, and it respected culture.
Yeah, I think that is surprising to a lot of us, that when you respect and you are proud of your own culture and you make it into a good product that can make people feel fun and can make people feel that they got some kind of value or they feel better about the society, about themselves, that it really they really resonate. So I think before that reminds me, you know, the culture differences doesn't have to be a competition.
No.
It doesn't have to be like invading your culture, invading your society.
Or one is better than the other. No, it's they come from different places. They also come from different value systems. Mm. And going back to success, successful is when it's respected universally.
Mm.
I find that that is really when things are successful. When you make something that is understood by people in and outside of your culture.
Wow, that's a really great definition, because through their success, like no matter if it's Black Myth Wukong or some kind of movies or other people, when we start to feel proud of our own culture, proud of our own self, then we not just get the validation from the outside, but then the validation really boosts our own confidence.
Absolutely.
If we just you know, trying to please others, if we're just trying to please Westerners, Western cultures, because they've been doing blockbuster movies or triple A's video games, and we're just completely dumped our culture, I think that would not have that as much power to make this masterpiece and make people feel, oh, I have such a positive impact, and then I wanted to really know more about other cultures, other countries, different part of the world, and using technology to really like help me become my life become triple times bigger.
Oh, absolutely. And it's such a good point that you bring up, that success, especially kind of global success on that scale, also gets people interested in other forms of culture.
Mm.
So you've got this video game that's set in a certain time period,
right,
in a more ancient Chinese style. And people would see it and go, oh, that's a really cool game.
Mm.
But then they might think, oh, what is it based on? What's the historical context?
Yeah.
And so for me, that's always interesting. I look at a piece of music or a video game or a movie, and it's not just that. It's all of the culture, the elements, people's choices, artistic design, whether something succeeds or not. You look at where it's coming from. And for me, it's very interesting to go behind the scenes, see what it's based on, see the influence that the media that things are based on has on, had on culture. Because if you look at Black Myth Wukong, it's based on a very famous novel, Journey to the West, which itself is based on a story of a Chinese Buddhist monk who travels to India to find the correct translations of Buddhist texts.
Yeah.
So it's like a story about a story about a story.
Yeah, and I would say like the...